Okay, well, let's get started. So first of all, again, everyone, good morning or good afternoon or wherever you are. Thank you very much for joining this call. This is one that that I've been very excited about for a long time, talking about innovation and creativity, ultimately how we take our ideas and we combine those with other people's ideas and we come up with something vastly superior to what we can do individually. This is one of, just to let you know, the hardest topics in business is how to innovate. And there are a lot of reasons for that, and we'll talk about what some of those reasons are. And the goal of this call is to give you some approaches, in some cases some specific tools, in some cases some frameworks and some ways to think about innovation and creativity that are perhaps different, in some cases radically different from what you've heard. And so just to give you a tiny bit of background, and then we're going to jump into it, please expect a lot of interaction on this call and a lot of actually trying stuff. So this is not going to be a call where you just hear things and take notes and either try them or not, but it's going to be, again, a very interactive experience. But just to let you know sort of what my background in all of this is, a number of years ago at USC, my department chair, where innovation is one of the subjects we teach, asked me to integrate an innovation piece into the executive MBA. And it took me weeks and weeks and weeks of just reading everything I could and cases and studies and talking to people. And I turned essentially what I had read into, frankly, a really bad course on innovation that got terrible reviews. And what everybody said is you're either telling us what's obvious or you're telling us what we can't do. You know, like you can't go up to your boss and say, you're really a jerk. So if you were less of a jerk, then maybe people would innovate more. You know, that you can't really do that in companies. And so I kind of went back to the drawing board and ended up talking to some famous people in the field of innovation. And I won't spend time dropping names, but they're probably names that you're familiar with if you've done a lot of reading or any reading in the field, to try to see what's the really new stuff in innovation that people can put into practice right away and make a real difference in their ability to innovate, ultimately their ability to come up with ideas and processes and techniques and technology that really makes a difference for themselves and for other people. And so that's what we're going to do in this call, the result of all of that. So let's just start with a bit of interaction. And so in a minute here, I'm going to ask for a couple of volunteers. But actually, before we get to the couple of volunteers, I want to make a key distinction. And this is one that is so important. If you don't really understand this and have it kind of in your bone marrow, then very little else that we're going to talk about here is going to work. Okay? And this is the difference between creativity and innovation. Now, we said a little bit about this on the call setup, so this may not be a totally new idea. But your ability to be creative is one thing. In fact, it's very important. It's even vital. And your ability to innovate is different. So creativity is what individuals do, and innovation is what groups do. Now, a group does not require authority. It doesn't require an organization. You know, it could happen at a party, but it happens with other people. So when people say, you know, I'm really innovative, that doesn't make any sense. So you know, you can say I'm creative. Now, innovation is fueled by creativity. So it's fueled by creativity. So part of what we need to do on this call is to dramatically enhance our ability to be creative, okay? Dramatically enhance it. And just to be blunt about this, most of us have no idea what creativity is or how it works. In fact, most of the ideas that we have are, in fact, wrong, okay? So let's just get it going. If you consider yourself to be kind of a creative person, I'm going to ask you to step forward here in a minute, and we'll have a quick little chat. And especially if you can think of a time, a specific incident, when you were innovative. After I said all that up, I said the wrong word. A time when you were creative. You know, you're working alone and you're creative. So maybe you're a painter. Maybe you're a writer. Maybe you're a technology person and you were writing code, but you felt like you were really in the creative zone. So maybe you were delivering a speech, or maybe you were working with clients to solve a problem, but there was this moment where, you know, something really dawned on you that was really a great idea just on your own, and it turned out to, in fact, be a great idea or a great product or a great painting or something. So we're casting the widest possible net on creativity. So do we have any people, we're just looking for one or two here, who might be able to tell us about such a moment in their lives? So how about this? If you're one of those people, Julian, should we have them hit number one? Does that work?
number one, please, if you'd like to share.
Okay.
All right.
So it looks like we have some
people.
Okay, so Julian, who's somebody who had number one?
All right, here, let's talk to Ruby.
Okay, Ruby.
Hello.
Hello, Ruby. Hi, Ruby.
Hi, Ruby.
Hello, good morning,
okay,
everybody.
Now, good morning. Now, for everybody else, you're going to do something that, believe it or not, is creative, but it's not going to seem creative, okay, as Ruby and I are chatting, but it's really at the heart of creativity, okay? So all you're going to do here is listen, okay? So Ruby, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about how you consider yourself to be creative?
Well, I was on the Toastmasters, so I was invited to write a speech. And the speech is about basically how my life is like. It's like what kind of life I live. So I was traveling, and I saw this beautiful scenery, so I describe my life with every scenery that I see, like waterfalls and a lick of serenity and waterfall of tremendous gratefulness. So basically I use all of the things that I have seen and feel and touch and described what kind of life that I live.
Wow, okay. So then the act of creativity, just so I understand, was you were writing a speech and talking about what your life is like, and then you used this metaphor of this beautiful scenery. And am I understanding right that that was actually a bit of scenery that you saw?
Yes, I was traveling. I was in Oregon.
Okay, and you were traveling and you saw this wonderful scene. Now, Ruby, just so we can get as much mileage out of this, not just for you but for everybody, I want you to just take 30 seconds and describe in detail this scene that you saw. Okay, the actual scene that you saw. Could you describe that for us?
Well, yes, it was a combination of many, but basically it was a beautiful garden that I walk into, and then from that garden I walk up to a meadow with a big lake, and the lake was really quiet, and there was beautiful birds on it, and breezes going through, and then in the background there is a beautiful waterfall.
Wow, it's beautiful. So now, Ruby, hang on here just a second. Julian, who's another person who identified that they're kind of creative and they have something to say? But it looks like George is one. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So George, can we bring you into it here for a second? Now, George,
sure.
You were listening to as Ruby was describing that situation, that scene that she saw.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that right? Okay, so George,
I heard that.
Okay, can you re-describe what it was that Ruby saw?
Yeah, she saw a beautiful garden and with the waterfall in the back, and obviously it had a lot of vegetation, that kind of thing, flowers, etc., that would be part of this garden. So I very much felt the picture she described.
Mm-hmm. And Ruby, how did that compare to what you had in your head as you were describing that scene?
George has described the first scene and the last scene, but in between there is a meadow with a big lake, and he didn't see that, at least in his mind.
Okay. Okay, so time out here for everybody. So there are two points that are absolutely critical as we talked about taking your creative ability and dramatically enhancing it. I mean enhancing it by a factor of 10. Okay, so then for everybody, I just want you to consider who was being creative in the situation. Was it Ruby being creative? Was it George being creative? Was it both? So Ruby, you know, clearly you were being creative in this. Now, George, as everybody's thinking about those two questions, George, Ruby made a metaphor as she wrote this speech. Do you remember what the metaphor was?
No, I don't, actually.
Okay. So here's, again, what I just want everybody to see. Number one.
Well,
so
I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
So you're talking about the metaphor of the garden and the fountain and all that as a metaphor of her life?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Makes sense so far? All we're doing here is just talking about what Ruby had in mind for the speech, and then this great scenery that she saw, and then the metaphor that she developed, right? So here's what
right.
I just want everybody to see, okay, Ruby and George, but everybody on the call. Number one, Ruby was obviously someone who had a creative insight, and she turned this insight into something that was really magnificent and a visual that we're all sort of, you know, caught up in. Now, as she's describing the scene, George is listening. Now, here's what very few people understand about creativity. George was being equally as creative as he took in the story that Ruby was describing, equally creative as Ruby was being as she described it, equally creative, okay? Now, that may not make any sense because Ruby, you know, comes up with something and George is just hearing it. But notice that as George is hearing it, he's got to take the story and he's got to hear it and he's got to understand it and he's got to see it. And then he's somehow got to kind of wire that into his brain and how he sees things. So if you are sitting in a speech as Ruby is delivering this thing, and you might think to yourself, wow, she's really creative. I really wish that I could be creative like her. Actually, you are exhibiting an act of creativity that is equal to the one that Ruby's doing. Okay. Now, it's easy to then look at George and say, well, you know, George missed the middle part of the story, right? Actually, I'm willing to bet, George, that as Ruby was describing the middle part of the story, your brain was going, you know, in some direction. You were probably hearing the middle part of the story and you were maybe thinking of what you were going to say or something, but there was this act of creativity that was going on in your head, right? So then for everybody, notice that our ability to take in others' creativity to a point where we can repeat it back to their satisfaction is really, really low. I mean, for most of us, it's really low, okay? So
right.
In this case, George actually did a pretty good job of, you know, hearing it. But as, you know, as he described it, you know, Ruby said, but you kind of missed the middle third. So then what's sort of the takeaway for all this? Well, number one, you know, part of what creativity is the ability to come up with this stuff, and we'll talk about how to, you know, take that and put that on steroids. Another part of creativity that we all have but we haven't really developed is the ability to listen to another person's little burst of creativity in a way that we can repeat it back to their satisfaction, and they say, that's exactly what I said. Okay, our ability to do that is, in fact, so low, even for people who are, you know, pretty well-trained in it, that it's kind of really surprising. Okay, now let's take that in the direction of innovation, okay? So let's say that Ruby and George were kind of on a team, okay, and it was their job to innovate, and there was some problem that they were trying to solve. And Ruby comes along and says, I've got this idea. And here's the idea, and she rattles off what it is. And George, thinking he's heard Ruby's full and complete creative little burst, says, well, that's really interesting. You know, Ruby, you said blah, 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 blah. And Ruby's thinking to herself, that's not entirely what I said. And then George launches off on his own little burst of creativity. So he's now injecting his burst of creativity into the innovative group or the group that's trying to be innovative. Notice that we're stopped before we can even get going. Because if this is a typical group, and, you know, Ruby, you're not a typical person, right? And George is not a typical person either. But if you were, then here's what would happen. Ruby would immediately take herself out of the meeting mentally, thinking to herself, well, George didn't get it. George didn't hear what I said. So as soon as George stops talking, I got to go back and say what I said again, because George didn't understand it. Meanwhile, Ruby's not hearing what George said. So then at the end of what George said, then Ruby says, well, George, you didn't understand what I said. I said blah, 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 blah. And George thinking to himself, well, I did hear that. At least I heard the important part of it. And George is thinking to himself, and now George takes himself out of the innovative process, Ruby didn't understand what I said. She was so focused on making sure that I followed what she said that, you know, frankly, was not as good as what I said, that she didn't listen. And so instead of George saying, okay, Ruby, what I think you said and what I think I may have missed the first time is blah, 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 George says, well, Ruby, actually, I did hear you. I really was listening. Notice it's kind of a stage three comment, okay? So, and then George says, but Ruby, you completely missed what I said. What I said was blah, 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 blah. Now imagine instead of having two people in the meeting, we've got eight. That is the state of the art of creativity in organizations and businesses and tribes, okay? Notice it's basically stopped before we can even start. okay? So now I kind of did a bait and switch on people because I said, you know, we're going to get a couple people to talk about stuff. And, George, I want you to know that I did a total bait and switch on you because I prepped it saying, you know, we're going to have a couple people talk about creative experiences. So probably what was going through George's head was I got to, like, prep my own creative thing here so that when Dave says, go, George, I can sort of be ready. But notice what we actually modeled was how groups actually behave in a situation where individuals are trying to be creative and groups are trying to be innovative. Okay, so let's just kind of summarize where we are in this and then where we're going to go for the rest of the call. Okay, number one, your ability to be creative, okay, comes down to two very different things. Number one is your ability to generate creativity on your own, okay? And I want to show you a technique in a few minutes for how to take that and, as I said, put it on steroids. Number two, your ability to be creative is dependent on your ability to take in other people's creative contribution and actually reproduce it in your own mind. Okay, that is just as much a creative act as the act of coming up with it in the first place, because you have to take it and you've got to put it in your brain. Now, for those of you that have studied innovation, I'm going to jump sort of way far down the road for a second. One of the big things we talk about in innovation is called the diffusion of innovation. So how long does it take an innovative idea to be adopted? So the fluorescent light was invented in something like 1853. I mean, it was a long time before, you know, the horrible fluorescent lights that we all remember from the movies from like the 50s, the flickering lights that kind of buzzed before those kind of, you know, appeared. Why did it take so long? Well, people had to reproduce in their own mind, here's the creative act. It's this light that sucks up a bunch of energy at the beginning but then becomes very efficient. And, you know, it's fairly cheap then to do electricity. And, like, it was a long time, you know, actually about 100 years, before people took the creative act, were able to reproduce it in their own lives, in their own minds and in their own lives, and then adopt it. And contrast that with how far it was from the invention of the cell phone, which is actually in the 1970s, to the point when we pretty much all had cell phones, which was late 80s, early 90s. Now, still, that was, you know, close to 20 years. And then contrast that with the diffusion of innovation of the Internet. So what's been happening in society is people are getting better and better and better at taking other people's creative little interjections here, seeing the value of it and reproducing it. In fact, we're becoming a society that is really hungry for really great uses of creativity and really great uses of innovation. But realize the barrier that stands between us and kind of having anything happen with that is other people have to get it, okay, which means we have to have the ability to really get other people's creativity. Okay, so hopefully this makes some sense. So now let me just give you some quick what are called innovation hygiene factors. Okay, these are the equivalent of brushing your teeth and putting on deodorant. People probably don't want to be in a meeting with you if you haven't taken a shower and brushed your teeth and put on deodorant. In the same way, if you're going to be in a meeting, the purpose of which is innovation, to take people's ideas and really put them together, you're going to have a very limited ability to interact creatively and to do really great innovative stuff, unless you're good at what are called the hygiene factors, okay? So here's the first hygiene factor. When another person, like when Ruby was giving her little interaction here, your job is not to wait for her to finish talking and then to say what your idea is. That's what most of us do in a brainstorming meeting, okay? Don't do that. What you want to do instead is really listen, with the goal of taking it in with so much clarity, so much accuracy, that at the end you could repeat it back and have Ruby say, that is exactly what I said. So the first hygiene factor is when another person is talking, don't wait your turn, but listen and take it in and recognize that that itself is an act of pure creativity. That's number one. Number two is when the person is done talking, before you then say, well, here's my idea. Okay, don't do that. Instead, say, Ruby, I just want to make sure that I mapped what you said. So you want to repeat back what the first person said to their satisfaction, so that when you're done, and you don't have to repeat it word for word, but when you kind of summarize it, you want them, this is your goal, this is your metric of success, to say, yes, you totally said what I said. That is what I said. At that point, here's hygiene factor number three. You want to use a phrase, either this phrase word for word or one that means the same thing. Well, based on what you said, and then you want to introduce your own little bit of creativity. Okay, so based on what you said. Now, that's very different from saying, okay, Ruby, I heard you, but now here's my idea. Okay, because the way a lot of us hear that is, oh, you're stepping on what I said, or you think your idea is better than mine. Whereas if you say, well, Ruby, based on what you said, and I just repeated it and you said that that is, in fact, what I said, now when I come forward with my little bit of creativity, it actually begins to find what Ruby said, and it connects, and it creates something that's far better than what either one of us could do alone. Okay, so hopefully this makes some sense. Now, we actually haven't talked about what innovation is, so let's now talk about what innovation is, okay? So again, creativity is personal invention of something new. It's done at a personal level. And again, I'll give you a technique for how to really kind of put that on steroids. But now, you know, so what is, you know, what really is innovation? So innovation is synthesizing lots of different interjections of creativity to create something that is radically different than what any single person did or could do. So it's the synthesis of creativity. Now notice what that requires. Okay, that requires each of us to be enormously creative, and it requires my creative addition, Ruby's creative addition, Julian's creative addition, you know, John King's creative addition, to somehow find each other and to connect, and out of that swirl to produce something that is radically new, that is radically different, that is in fact different than what any one of us alone thought we could do. So that's what we're going for in innovation. This, now, here's what this does not require. This does not require an organization. This does not require any authority. Okay, so if you're in an organization and nobody's told you to be innovative, hell with that. You can be innovative anyway. Okay, it doesn't require people to all be part of the same group or be working for the same company. You can innovate at a party. You can innovate at Starbucks. But innovation requires other people. And, again, it requires really high innovation in the group, and it requires the ability to be creative. So I'd like to give you a technique. This is one of the most powerful that I have ever seen for enhancing personal creativity. Okay? And I'm actually going to get, you know, I'm going to ask in a minute somebody to say what your experience was during this process. Okay, so here we go. Okay. We've all got a little inner voice. Okay, so hopefully you can hear that little inner voice. The little inner voice, you know, is telling you things right now, like it might be saying this is good, or it might be saying this is really useful, or it might be saying this is really dumb, this is all stuff I know. Okay, there's that inner voice. We all have it. It's just part of being human, okay? So that's the first thing, is just notice the inner voice. Listen to it. Okay, so give you a couple seconds. And now here's step number two. The question is, can you visualize your inner voice? Can you attach some picture, some visualization, some graphic in your brain to that inner voice? Can you see it? You know, maybe it's a big mouth. Maybe it's a big brain. Maybe it's kind of a cloud that's uttering expression. Okay, but can you visualize it? And what I'm actually asking you to do is to visualize it. Okay? Now here's where it gets fun. Number three, can your inner voice visualize you? I'm going to say that again. Can your inner voice visualize you? Can it see a picture of you? Okay, now for some of you, you're seeing something, and for others of you, you can't see something. Okay, and both are fine. Okay, and then the fourth step is to notice the effect that these first three steps had on what your inner voice is saying or not saying. Okay, so I'm just going to quickly go through the three steps again, and then I'm going to ask somebody to comment on what happened, okay? So number one, listen to your inner voice. Just identify it, start to hear it. Number two, can you see your inner voice? Visualize it. Number three, can your inner voice visualize you? And then number four, notice the effect that this has on what your inner voice says or doesn't say. Okay? So if you got something to say about this, you know, just you don't mind just sharing your experience here, please hit number one. Okay. I saw Dave hit number one first, Dave Forrest. So let's, Julian, unmute Dave.
Hear me?
Yeah, hi, Dave.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, good.
So, Dave, when you were noticing your inner voice, do you mind saying what your inner voice was saying?
My inner voice was saying, inner voice. I know all about the inner voice.
Okay, good. That's perfect.
Right.
That's clearly someone who's heard about the inner voice before. Okay.
Right.
So then I asked you to visualize your inner voice. What happened at that point?
I was running some pictures through my mind, trying to settle on one. I was thinking of people, and I finally settled on an old coworker who used to work in the same office with me, and she used to talk a lot. Yeah, so I just said her face.
Actually,
that was the
picture.
Yeah.
A very specific person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. Okay, then number three, I said, so can your inner voice visualize you? And what happened at that point?
That one really threw me for a loop. So for a while, I drew a blank. But then I got the idea of kind of my inner voice is inside my head. So I was thinking what the world looked like from the inside of my head and trying to see, like, me from the inside of my head. So I was thinking of kind of being behind my forehead. If you've ever gone inside the Statue of Liberty and seen those tiny little windows up at the top looking out, that's what I was seeing, like, kind of like jail bars.
Yeah.
Of a tiny little window looking out of my head.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, yeah. But it threw me for a loop for a while, yeah.
For everybody, a certain percentage, and I don't know what the percentage of the population is, I'm actually in this percentage, cannot visualize, or rather cannot have your inner voice visualize you. So when I went through this exercise for the first time, I just drew a blank. And other people, and I don't know, maybe it's the highly creative among us, and maybe Dave's one of those, can actually visualize something. But that's actually not the point of the exercise. The number four, Dave, I asked, so what effect did the first three steps have on whatever your inner voice was saying or not saying?
Yeah, that one really made me laugh. It was off. It got It got short-circuited, yeah. It turned off.
That's what happens for most people in this exercise.
Yeah.
Not all, but for most people, it actually shuts off your inner voice. Now, to notice the setup here, I said this is a technique that is going to take your creativity and put it on steroids. And I did this weird, you know, thing about listening to your inner voice and can you visualize it and can it visualize you, and then it sort of gets short-circuited. And what a lot of people are kind of thinking now is, but wait a minute, isn't the point of creativity to make my inner voice more creative? And, in fact, that is exactly the opposite, okay? Your inner voice is not creative for most of us. It is not creative. It's sort of like a running commentary about what's happening. You know, this is interesting. I know about inner voice. Well, when is Dave going to get to, you know, like how we turn this into money, or, you know, what am I going to have for breakfast, or I had breakfast and it was really bad. Tomorrow I got to have a better breakfast. That's kind of the inner commentary. Now, every once in a while, you will identify something. Something will kind of rise to the level of awareness that's highly creative. And a lot of us actually think that the inner voice sort of spewed out something creative. But actually, that's not what happens. Okay, so the first part of this technique about dramatically enhancing innovation is we actually want to short-circuit that inner voice. We actually want to make it shut up, okay? And one way to do that is this technique. And the great thing about it is you can do it the first time and it generally works. The thousandth time, it still works. So, again, the steps are listen to your voice. Just, you know, don't try to mute it because that actually doesn't work. And then number two, you know, as you listen to what it says, visualize it. The number three, can it visualize you? And typically that short circuits it, whether you get a visual or not. And you're then left in this moment of kind of silence, okay? So what do you want to do in that moment of silence when nobody, you know, when your inner voice is not saying anything? At that point, you want to grab anything you can write on, anything you can draw on, anything. And you want to write down not what your inner voice is saying, because in all likelihood it's either been muted or it's quiet or it's spewing out different stuff, but something will be there, okay? Now we got to sort of switch analogies. I always think of in the gold rush, you know, there were people walking down rivers in California and they saw this little sparkly thing. And it's not that the, you know, that there was some sort of a fountain that was producing gold. They just kind of looked down, and there was gold. That's how creativity works. If you create an environment of stillness, which is turning off the inner voice, and you just start to notice, there's creative stuff all over the place. It's just there, and you just pick it up. And so stepping out of the analogy, you just write down what it is. So this is my way of saying it, and there are people who say it probably far more eloquently, but my mental image of creativity is that it's a well. You know, it's a well of water, and it's a well that's in a region that's kind of dry, it's kind of arid. And so every certain period of time, maybe every day, or if you're highly creative, maybe every hour, that well fills up. It is just full of really great, cool, you know, creative stuff. It's just like full of stuff. Now, some of it may seem kind of weird. You know, some of it may seem like poetry. Some of it may seem like an interesting technological idea. Some of it might seem like a novel that you want to write. It's going to be kind of random. What you want to get in the habit of doing, and this is a practice, is every day at a minimum, you want to empty the well. So what does that mean? It means you kind of do this little trick to kind of mute your inner voice and or make it behave a little differently. And then you just want to capture whatever's there, okay? Just capture it. Write it down. If you take a journal, just write it down. And you want to get to the point where you feel, this is a feel more than a kind of an intellectualization, that the well itself is empty. Just the well is empty. And when you hit that point, you're done. Now, for most of us, the period of draining the well in terms of minutes is about 20, okay, about 20 minutes. So a practice that I've had for many years, and everybody that I've worked with and a lot of people who've taken courses from me, you know this, that I have this practice every day of emptying the well. And if I'm doing something that requires a lot of creativity, a book, you know, an article, getting ready for a speech, kind of like Ruby was saying, you might empty the well a number of times during the day. And there might be a minute when you're, you know, taking a shower or maybe driving, and suddenly you become aware of the fact that the well is full. And when that happens, you want to empty it out. You know, if you're driving, you know, don't start texting yourself because that's both illegal and dangerous. But you want to have some way of just capturing it. You know, so carry around a recorder with you, but some way of just emptying the well. So if you get in the habit, again, just to summarize, of turning off the inner voice or muting it or changing it somehow, you'll find, to use a different analogy, that there are these little pockets of gold all over the place. And they may not, you know, seem really valuable at first. You know, maybe it's fool's gold. But you kind of want to just pick them up. You just want to start collecting them. To use a different analogy, okay, let's not mix them because it gets weird. To use a different analogy, you've got a well, and you're doing other stuff. You know, you're at work, you're driving, you're, you know, writing code, you're doing whatever you're doing. The well fills up. It happens below the level of consciousness. And every day, you want to turn off the inner voice as much as you can, and you want to empty the well, and you just want to put it someplace. And when you get in the habit of doing this, here's what you'll find. Number one, the well fills up faster and faster and faster. It goes from maybe once a day it's full to once an hour it's full to, if you need it, it can fill up in a matter of seconds. It's in a matter of seconds. That's how you make yourself more creative. But notice what you have to not do here. If you put any kind of judgment or expectation on the quality of the water of the well, actually it shuts off. That you're kind of asking your inner voice to be creative. And your inner voice is not creative. Your inner voice is a running commentary. Okay, you want to turn off your inner voice. So you don't want to judge it. It's going to take you in a certain direction. And frankly, it might surprise you. When I empty my inner well, one of the things that keeps coming up for me every day is something that is more like a novel than something that would be, you know, like a lot of the writing, you know, that John King and I do. Where's that going to go? I don't know. But you just want to get in the habit of doing that. Now, that will naturally make you more creative, okay? So, again, just to kind of summarize where we are on the call to where we're going, the first thing you've got to do is learn to be really, really creative, okay? And I've given you some techniques for doing that, recognizing that when another person speaks and you're getting it and you're taking it in, that is an act of unadulterated creativity. You want to get really good at that, okay? Number two is this technique we just went through to mute your inner voice and then, if you will, notice the gold, or to use a different analogy, to empty the well. You want to get better at that. You want to make that a daily practice, okay? And then number three, we went through some hygiene factors that will prevent you from taking this creativity that you have and becoming very stage three and squashing the creativity of other people, okay? And now we're looking forward to innovation, which is the process of synthesizing every person's little bit of creativity into something that was radically different than what any individual could do alone. Okay? So anyway, that's a lot of talking, and we've been at this something like 35 minutes. So let me actually just, you know, we'll just take a couple people here. Those just kind of reflect or share about what you're picking up so far, anything that may be useful or not useful. So if you've got something to share, why don't you just hit number one? And whoever does it first, will, okay, so I saw, looks like Kate.
Hi, this is Kate.
Hi, so Kate, what are you seeing here?
Let me switch off my speakerphone. It's interesting because I've been working on a problem of how I wanted to approach writing a certain book. And when we were doing the this turning off your inner voice, at the moment that that happened, I started scribbling down this idea about this book. And then immediately after that, you said, write down whatever comes to mind. It's your gold rush. And I had just been doing that because something came to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that very powerful, you know, already, just this minute.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, and one thing about creativity, and this is for Kate and for everybody, it doesn't follow your schedule, okay? So if you are really into time management and you say between 9 and 10 I'm going to be creative, that little part of your brain that fills up the well or puts the gold out in the river, it pretty much just flips you the middle finger.
Can I say one thing, too, which is I didn't know that I was thinking about that book. I kind of had shelved it thinking, I don't know how to write that, that's that. And what I thought from this is that I really got to go look at that again. I have an idea now.
Yeah. So, Kate, this may sound really strange. You don't know how to write that book, but that book knows how to write you.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
You don't know how to write that book, but that book knows, or to say it differently, that book knows how you need to write it.
I think you're absolutely right. If you get the inner voice to go away, the rest, it will come out of itself.
Right.
I can feel that. Yeah. That's
yeah.
really great. Thank
Very
you.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to Linda. Linda, what are you seeing here?
For 35 years.
Okay, and there we go. Linda, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so I have a meditation practice that I do every morning, and I never related that to creativity before. And what just dawned on me is that the moments when that practice goes very deep and there is no inner voice, I just got this for myself, that after that, those are the times when there are just things that come up for me. They just appear for me out of the scenes nowhere. So what you just said, my experience is validating that, even though I never made that connection before.
That's really good, Linda. That's really good. There's a book out on the market, and I'm blanking on the author, and I don't want to take the time. Actually, I don't want to pull myself away from the call to Google it. But it's called Managing Creativity, and it's a book that's got some okay points in it. But here's what I want you to notice: that is the dumbest title of a book ever written. Managing Creativity. You can't manage creativity. You can't. It's like, you know, managing the air. How do you do that? Creativity just is. Now you can learn to listen to it. You can learn to, you know, enhance it a bit. But it's very much a leadership phenomenon, not a management phenomenon. So that's very good. It's very good, Linda. And a lot of us are actually creative, but we haven't highlighted those moments of creativity. So in your meditative practice, there's something creative that comes out of it. So that's very good. So what I hope you're getting then for everybody on this call so far is, you know, maybe you're more creative than you thought. Okay, that's one. You know, two would be that what you thought was creativity, which is a little inner voice sort of spewing ideas out at you, is actually not your best creativity. Maybe, you know, it's got its moments, but that's really not your best creativity. Your best creativity is when you take that little voice and learn to make it be quiet or learn to muzzle it or learn to make it say something else. And then notice just kind of around the landscape of your awareness that there are these little bits of creativity. And in many cases, they are the answer to a problem that you didn't think you'd ever solve, like the book you didn't think you'd ever come back to. So that's very good. So then on the second part of the call, which we're now transitioning to, is so how do we take this creativity and turn this into innovation? Okay, and remember, innovation is a synthesis. Okay, so first of all, this obviously requires other people. Okay, so just to tie this back to the tribal leadership stuff, a lot of this will be obvious for some of you, but just to make sure that we're all on the same page, if this little group of people forms a tribal stage one, and then you utter your little bit of creativity, here's going to be the reaction in stage one. Wow, that is so stupid, it makes me want to punch you in the face. That is, like, so stupid. I want to come over and just slap you right now. And that's actually not a metaphor. You know, the slap is not a metaphor. I mean, it engenders anger from, okay, that's stage one. Stage two, you drop in your little bit of creativity, you know, and imagine this is the Department of Motor Vehicles. Here will be the reaction from the group, okay? Wow, you know, that'll never work. We tried that before. We tried something similar. You know, it's great you're being thoughtful, you're being creative, and that's really great. But, you know, that stuff just doesn't work around here. Okay, that's stage two. Okay, stage three, you drop in your little bit of creativity, and everybody, you know, kind of looks at you with this sense of sort of eagerness. But the eagerness has nothing to do with what you said. They realize that now we're talking about creativity, so they're waiting for you to shut up so they can say what the real answer is, which is far more creative and far more useful than what you have to say. Okay, so essentially it's a bunch of people stepping on each other. And a lot of the creative stuff is really good, but there's absolutely no synthesis. In fact, the dynamic in the group is that creativity gets squashed, gets killed. And then a lot of people say, well, I'll never do that again, and that creates stage two. Okay, at stage four, you drop in your creative idea, and people start to really listen to it, okay? And they might even say, I'm not sure I completely follow. Can you say more about that? And so you find in a stage four group, you're actually more creative, okay? What's actually happening is your creativity is morphing, is changing into innovation. It's changing into innovation. So probably the greatest burst of innovation in the 20th century was at Xerox. And some of you know the story, right? At Xerox Park, it was this group of people, and they were trying to solve the problem of how do we make kind of technology easier to use. And as you know, people were innovating, and they came up with the graphic user interface. So if you're on a Mac, it's graphic user interface. The, you know, most PDAs have a graphic user. They invented that whole graphic user interface. You know, it runs on Windows, or rather Windows is a graphic user interface. And they actually just invented that. It was all these people kind of putting forward their ideas, free flow of information. Somebody, you know, as I understand the story, said, I've got an idea for how we can make technology so much easier to use, it'll just be radical. Wow, well, you know, say more about that. Well, you know, that's a really interesting idea. So what I hear you saying, so they're using the hygiene factors, so what I hear you saying is blah, blah, blah. Yeah, well, okay, well, you know, based on what you said, what if we use the metaphor of a desktop? Just like you've got the top of your desk, you know, you got your trash can over here. I mean, what if we, okay, wait a minute, let me make sure I understand that. So if we kind of made the screen look like a desktop, is that what you're saying? Well, that could be really good, but then we need some way of pointing. You know, how could we do the, and the result, of course, is the graphic user interface that revolutionized pretty much all of our lives. Okay, that's stage four. Now, stage five reacts actually very differently. That's where this amazing idea begins to gel. This amazing idea begins to gel. And then the question is, who can we take this amazing idea that all of us own, you know, all of us contributed to, and connect it with other amazing ideas that are happening, you know, in completely different places and use that to change the world? Now, this is actually where the graphic user interface story kind of turns dark. So when this little group of people, you may know the story, came out from Xerox corporate to see what this little R&D group at Xerox Park was doing, they looked at it and they said, what does this have to do with selling copiers? I mean, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. You're spending how much money? And you have little graphic things, little games that you're playing? That's not going to sell more copiers. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. Okay. Now, some people have tried to put a dollar estimate on how much was lost by Xerox not recognizing what they had. The best number I've heard is $1.25 trillion. $1.25 trillion. And so essentially Xerox said, well, you know, if Xerox Park said, well, if you're not interested, then, you know, do you mind if we show other people? And as the story went, Steve Jobs is one of the people who walked through, and he got to the other end, and he said, okay, I've seen the future. You know, so in fact, they did sort of take it in a stage five direction at the end, but not, unfortunately, with Xerox, okay? So then, well, what does all this mean? Well, obviously, you want to, before you start the process of really being innovative, you want to make sure you've got a stable group at stage four, okay? And if you've got a stable group at stage four, then all this stuff just becomes a matter of technique, okay? But so if you've got the group at stage four, that means you know your values, and, you know, this is, again, where the calls that my partner John King does, you know, can really enhance your ability to create stable triads. And so you want to make sure that all of that is really in place. Now, once that's in place, there's a few techniques that we can drop on to make your groups far more innovative, okay? So here's the assumption, actually the two assumptions. Number one, that you're doing these personal practices to be more creative. Number two, that you've created a stage four group in this tribe, okay? So if you're a solo entrepreneur, that you're reaching out to other people, you're forming stable triads around you, you've got your values worked out, you've got a noble cause, so all of that's in place. You found a way to stabilize yourself, so if somebody has a really bad day and they come in and they start beating up on people, that the triad will come in and kind of correct that. So assuming all of that is in place, I'd like to give you three specific techniques that can make your tribe more innovative, okay, so that it can synthesize ideas better, that it can synthesize ideas faster, that it can come up with ideas on just a different scale, okay? Here's number one. You want to make a long list of your assets, okay? You want to make a long list of your assets. And in looking at your assets, you want to look for a very particular kind of asset. It's an asset that makes your tribe different, that makes your tribe special, that might even make your tribe a little weird, okay? So these are assets that you may not at first glance be really proud of. You know, like I was working at a group recently, I won't say where, but it's a part of the U.S. federal government. And they said, you know, one thing about us is we're all really dorky. Like, we all know the call letters of the Enterprise, you know, from Star Trek, and they rattled off what it was, NCC something. And so, like, we just know all that stuff. We're just, you know, kind of like dorky. Okay. And they listed off a bunch of other, you know, assets that they had. And then the next question is, so what assets do you have that make you kind of different, you know, or maybe, you know, a little weird? The fact that they were kind of dorky actually turned into a huge competitive advantage for them, okay? So the kind of assets you're looking for are what we at Culturesync call MacGyver assets. So now MacGyver is currently made into a movie called MacGruber that's actually a parody of MacGyver, but MacGyver was a guy who could make a nuclear bomb out of a paperclip, right, and a rubber band and some duct tape. A MacGyver asset is one that you can take and kind of turn on its head a little bit and use it in a really amazing, amazing way. So for this group that kind of said they're really dorky, well, one of the things that they realized is they could become a little think tank for coming up with new ideas based on kind of their dorky knowledge of science fiction, and that they could actually use that to come up with product ideas and service ideas for this big part of the federal government that they're, you know, a member of. And, in fact, they did it. They're now a well-respected kind of little think tank. Okay, there's a hospital that I was looking at a while back, and one of the kind of odd assets that they had is they had a sociologist in the group, somebody who really understood, you know, how sociology works. And the specific problem that they were trying to solve was how do they dramatically enhance patient care. And they've got a sociologist on the group, somebody who really understood kind of how families, you know, create norms of behavior and, you know, well, what does that mean? And they realized that they could take what that one person knew and create an entire system in the hospital where families would handle the regulation of hand washing. You know, so in hospitals, there's a good chance if you're in a hospital, if you're admitted, that the doctor or the nurse working on you has in fact not washed their hands when they work on you. And the chances that that's going to cause an infection are actually very high. So they took this one asset, you know, this MacGyver asset. Well, we know kind of how, you know, families regulate behavior. So they taught families to make sure that any time a doctor, a nurse, a PA, whatever, was going to come and work on this person, on this family member, that the family member would say, have you washed your hands? And if the doctor came in with an army of residents, the doctor would turn to the residents and say, you know, let this be a lesson to you. We all need to learn to wash our hands. And they'll march through army style and wash their hands. Okay, they took the fact that they knew how families could create norms of behavior, and they did something really amazing with it. Okay, so this first technique is very simple. You want to find the assets that make you special. Maybe the assets that you can turn on your ear and do something really remarkable. You know, Zappos used the fact that they've got cult-like users to create tours. And the tours dramatically enhanced the awareness of the brand and the awareness of what made them, you know, really kind of interesting as a group. Okay, so that's number one, is you just want to make a long list of your assets. But as you do it, you want to find those assets that are really different, that are maybe a little weird. Okay, here's technique number two. Speaking of weird, you want to create what's called a pocket of weirdness. Now, what does that mean? Maybe your overall tribe is not particularly creative. Okay, so maybe you've got a group of friends or a group of entrepreneurs. They're really not that creative. They're really into like just grinding stuff out. Throughout the history of corporate America, the most innovative groups have been geographically different, located different in a different place than the larger organization. Bell Labs, that largely invented the phone the way that we know it, or prior to the cell phone, was physically located away from the rest of the phone company. Okay, at Lockheed, they created Skunk Works up in Palmdale. Originally, Lockheed was located in Burbank. They had to take all these really creative, cool, kind of weird people, and they had to create a pocket of weirdness. Okay, now, a pocket of weirdness doesn't mean that you have to physically get a bunch of people together and locate them differently. It might mean every Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're all going to get on the call, and that's going to be our pocket of weirdness. And the deal is, in a pocket of weirdness, is it's our goal to innovate. It's our goal to, you know, come up with creative stuff individually and put it in the blender, you know, and see what comes out. And it's unpredictable where it's going to go. So a pocket of weirdness is just a kind of little space. It can be a portion of time. I've seen it in one organization in Chicago that I saw, very small company. They physically had a corner of their building, and they said, when we go over there, we're creative. John King has this great description of Pixar. When people really wanted to be super creative, they'd go play volleyball. Okay, that's their pocket of weirdness. If we need to solve a problem, let's go play volleyball. Out on the volleyball, you know, when we're playing volleyball, we can kick ideas around, and that's really how we solve really, you know, tough problems. So you want to create a pocket of weirdness. It can be, again, a time when people get together for the purpose of being a little weird and seeing how weird ideas connect. It can be a physical space. It can be an activity like volleyball. But you want to create a little pocket. And within that pocket, the rules are a little different. This is where we're creative. This is where we're innovative. This is where we see how my creative idea and your creative idea can work together to create something really, really new. Now, the third technique is actually a way of making sure that your innovation doesn't derail. And this is really hard for people, okay? This is really hard for people. You have to take your creative idea when you're going into the meeting, and you want to write it down on a little sheet of paper before you go into the meeting. This is not a metaphor, okay? Physically write it down on a sheet of paper. And then you want to take that sheet of paper, and you want to wad it up in a little ball, and you want to throw it in the trash can. Now, why do you want to do that? Because then when you go into the meeting and you say your creative idea, and immediately you see it picked up and morphed and changed and connect with other people's ideas, it'll be a little reminder to you, the fact that you wadded up that piece of paper and threw it away, a reminder to you that the goal of this meeting is not for you to talk other people into your idea. So a different way to say this third technique is you want to surrender your creative idea as quickly as you possibly can. Let it go. Okay, you said it, they heard it, they repeated it back to your satisfaction, they're on to another topic. Don't let that little stage three thing come along and say, wait a minute, but they didn't really value my idea because that was far cooler than their idea. And just a physical kind of reminder of that is you want to write down that idea and you want to toss it in the trash can. Okay? So, again, we've talked about a bunch of stuff here, but three techniques, assuming you've got stage four, to really put your innovation into hyperdrive have to do with making a list of assets, finding those MacGyver assets that make you a little bit weird. Okay, so we talked about that. We talked about, you know, the hygiene factors, you know, really earlier on. We talked about the idea of taking your creative idea and, you know, kind of wadding it up and throwing it away and, you know, really surrendering it. And then just the last little piece, and we're going to get in groups here in just a second and talk about, you know, what you learned from this and what you might want to apply, is you've got to not try to own what comes out of the group. Okay, you want to not try to own what comes out of the group. So often what happens when you get these really cool kind of, you know, stage four creative, you know, little bursts or these little bursts of innovation, if somebody walks out and said, man, you know, I said that really creative thing, and, you know, other people like added a little bit to it, but really it's still kind of my core idea, and wow, this is so good. And then when you hear someone else claiming credit for it, it turns into the battle of credit, and that will just completely derail what you did. And it'll limit your ability to ever create those little pockets of weirdness again, which are really the heart and soul of all of this. So then let's just do this. Since we've all, you know, been listening, and I really appreciate your attention to all of this. Julian, should we just put them in groups of three? And what I'd like to ask you to do just in these groups of three is just, you know, take a few seconds and just say, number one, what you learned, if anything. And number two, what are you going to do to make either yourself more creative or your groups and your tribes more innovative? Okay, so first of all, what did you learn? And then number two, what are you going to do? What are you going to use to make either yourself more creative or your groups – sorry, yourself more creative or your groups or your tribes more innovative. Okay, so Julian, should we drop them in groups of three?
Yeah, they're in groups of three, ready to go.
Okay. Yeah, we're all back in the big room now, so I think we just muted calls. So, again, thanks for being with us on the call. What we're going to do here just at the end, and we should wrap this up in just a few minutes here, is let's just hear from a person, just a kind of representative of what you learned or what you saw, something. And then I'm going to turn it over to actually John King, who has something else to say for just a moment. So if there's somebody who'd like to just say what you saw from the whole call, or maybe what you got out of the triads or anything at all, just to kind of bring this to a close for people, if you would hit number one. Okay, Brad,
Andy,
let's unmute Brad's line.
Can you hear me?
Brad, hi.
Hello? Yes.
We can hear you. So,
okay.
Brad, what did you see here?
Well, taking on practices and doing them creates an environment. And it's, I keep forgetting that, you know, it's such, you know, a rich thing to do is be, you know, at cause and creating your practices. So the other thing is writing my, you know, in that space to write my ideas down. That was like a weak area for me, is being able to articulate what comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was
good.
So taking on the practices of, you know, listening, recreating, and getting together with the groups. And, you know, getting innovative with groups, people.
Great. Okay, well, Brad, thank you very much. You know, and then just for everyone here, you know, we try to do these calls on a basis just as a way of giving back to the community of people who've been, you know, interested in tribal leadership or are using that in, you know, in various ways. And our only expectation coming from the call is just that you'll take whatever's valuable and you'll pass it on. We don't ask you to... you know, do anything with it other than just, you know, try it and let us know how it goes for you. If it goes really well, let us know so that we can make sure that we emphasize whatever that thing was in the future. And if something doesn't go well, then please let us know that as well. It's good feedback for us. So I just really want to thank all of you for being on the call. And my partner in crime here, John King, is actually just going to wrap up the call by talking about what's next.